Blue Dot, Episode 18, Summer in the North State with the National Weather Service.
This is Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schlom.
And I'm Matt Schiltz.
Well, Matt, summer is officially here, and with it, Northern California gets ready for heat in the valley, cool nights in the mountains, and sweatshirt weather along the coast.
Yeah, well, how about that weather? Seems like the most boring weather pattern of the year, and pretty much the easiest to forecast, and I know that because I do weather forecasts for the station here, but it's actually not as simple as it might seem.
Yeah, is it? I wonder if it is. So joining us to talk about that is Bill Rash and Tom Dang. They are forecasters for the National Weather Service in Sacramento, their office in Sacramento. Hi, guys.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
So let's start with you, Bill. Let's talk about the basics of summer weather here in the Valley. What are some of the differences you see between the North Valley, like, you know, the Redding, Red Bluff area, and then, you know, as you go south through Chico and down through all the way to Sacramento?
That's probably the most, when it comes to temperature forecasting in our area, that difference in temperature that can result from the north to south can be one of the biggest challenges. It gets, as a lot of people know, it gets very hot up in the northern part of the valley, and it can get also hot down here in the Sacramento area. But we do get, a lot of people are familiar with is the Delta breeze, which is basically when the winds blow in from the ocean, and they're able to blow into the central part of the valley, and that can create a situation where we really cool rapidly, or we can have much cooler temperatures than what happens in the north. The other little effect that happens up in the north is as you go from south to north in the valley, basically, the elevation increases, and if you have a northerly wind that's blowing across the valley, that's actually air will come down the mountains that are north of Redding and Red Bluff, and as air moves downward in the atmosphere, it warms. So there's two kind of cool, those two effects make for some interesting temperature forecasting in the valley.
So, not to make it too simplistic, but it's kind of like when you plunge down on an air pump, like a bicycle air pump, that the compressed air gets hotter, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. Yeah, it's true science happening in the atmosphere.
Well, what are some of the things you look for, you're keeping an eye out for in the long-range models when you're doing summer weather, looking for changes?
Hey, this is Tom, and keeping in the backdrop that the National Weather Service, the mission is to protect life and property, in the summer there's really two different things weather-wise that can influence that, really high-impact type weather events. Number one being heat, obvious. That's kind of the obvious one. And in terms of, you know, keeping track of that, in terms of just forecasting hot weather, we've actually gotten pretty good at doing so. We can forecast pretty reliably, you know, 100-degree heat out 5 to 10 days. So we have some pretty good confidence in forecasting those really hot stretches of weather that we get in the summer. The trickier one is the forecasting of thunderstorms here in California. You wouldn't think that we get much in the way of precipitation and showers and thunderstorms in California, but it seems like we do tend to get maybe a couple rounds of thunderstorms every summer. And those can be really, really impactful because obviously things dry out here in the summer, and any sort of lightning strike can cause, create fires. And the fact that thunderstorms often bring gusty and erratic winds, that can really help spread a lightning-caused fire in a manner that can really be destructive. So those are the two things that we really keen in on during the summer.
This is Blue Dot. I'm Dave Schlom along with Matt Schiltz, and we are talking to forecasters Bill Rash and Tom Dang from the National Weather Service in Sacramento. Well, let's talk heat because that's really the big story in summertime. It gets really hot up here in the summer. When do we generally have our peak heat in the North Valley?
Yeah, it pretty much starts in mid-July, and it goes through early August. That's when you see the highest average daily temperatures. And for the most part, when you look at most of the cities and the climatological record, that's where, like, the all-time record highs also occur during those times.
Do you know what are our all-time record highs for, like, Chico, Red Bluff, Redding?
Yeah, like in Red Bluff, it is 121, and in Redding, it's 118. I don't have Chico in front of me. In Sacramento, I believe it's like 114. And then, you know, we've been talking about how there is such a difference between the Delta area and the North. So, like down in Vacaville and down in the Delta area, you're looking at record highs down there around 102, 103, 104. So, you know, just looking at the record highs is a kind of a cool way to show the difference in the climate from 121 up in Red Bluff down to like 104 in Vacaville.
Why would it be that Red Bluff would be slightly higher than Redding? Any idea?
Hey, this is Tom again. It's all about that north wind. There's just enough of a down glide down the mountains that because Red Bluff is slightly lower in elevation than Redding is, there's a little bit more of a warming effect as you go from Redding to Red Bluff. On any given day during the summer, most of the time you'll find that Red Bluff high temperatures are going to be a little bit warmer than Redding. Sometimes if you get the south wind coming into Red Bluff, that's not the case. But if you can keep a light north wind going all day, usually Red Bluff will be warmer.
Well, there's different kinds of heat waves. And let's start with like the classic high-pressure ridge that gets parked over the eastern Pacific, you know, just off the coast here. What is that? Explain to us how that works.
We try not to like classify different types of, you know, weather patterns too much, especially with the public, just because it can get a little confusing. Like from our perspective, hot is hot, and it really doesn't matter, you know, where that ridge of high pressure is coming from. But I mean, those systems with the high pressure in the eastern Pacific, those tend to bring maybe shorter-lived heat waves that, you know, only last maybe a couple days, just because they tend to be a little bit more transient. So they move in from west to east. And, you know, they'll move by in a couple days, and then behind that there will be some sort of cooling factor with some winds coming in from the southwest. So in that sense, the biggest maybe differentiation there is just it doesn't last quite as long as maybe some other high-pressure systems.
Well, I'm gonna beg to differ with you a little bit. As a lifetime, you know, a person that's lived here most of my life, to me, the worst kind of heat wave we get is when you get that high pressure system parked over the Four Corners, you know, the New Mexico, Arizona region over there, and then it starts kicking up that moisture towards us, and it gets hot and humid, and it seems to last for a long time. What goes on there? Because it seems to me we're getting more humidity with those systems.
Hey, this is Tom again, and you're absolutely correct with that ridge of high pressure building in from the desert southwest. What happens is when that builds up, it's very difficult to get one of those Pacific Northwest troughs to come on and bring us some cooler weather. So, yeah, you are absolutely correct that those do tend to last longer. And additionally, you mentioned the monsoonal moisture. That's like the classic pattern to get thunderstorms in the desert southwest. So when you hear about thunderstorms and flash flooding over the Great Basin, over Arizona and Southern California, that's the pattern that will bring it. And oftentimes, some of that moisture does creep up the Sierra. Sometimes it gets into the valley, not all the time, but when we see thunderstorms build up over the Sierra, it's usually that pattern that brings it in the summer.
This is Bill. I wanted to add off of what Tom just said, too. The pattern you're just talking about, as far as heat and heat impacts, that can also be, again, you're right on, it can be the worst scenario. Also, when we have the most heat illness or heat impacts is when we have really high highs in the daytime, but also it doesn't cool down at night. Because at night times when we need to open up our windows and cool our houses down and the body needs to regulate. And really that happens at around 70 degrees. We see that we have a lot of impacts if the low temperatures stay above about 70 degrees. So what can happen with these monsoonal patterns is if the timing is right, the daytime can be clear, sunny, and hot, but then maybe some clouds will move up at nighttime, which will keep the lows up. And then it's, you know, if the timing is all right, then you can end up with lows in the mid-70s to upper 80s. And if you have that for over an extended period of time, that's when the body, people can't cool off their houses and they can't cool off and you start to have problems.
Explain to us what exactly is the dew point.
Would you like to handle that, Bill?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's basically, think about it at the temperature at which you would have to cool the air to saturate it. So it's like, and by what that means, like, you know, when you have a glass of water, icy cold water, and you put it out in a hot area and you get moisture that forms on the outside, basically that cup and the water and the ice is cooling the air temperature around it to the dew point temperature, and moisture is forming. So the, you know, the higher up that temperature is, the more moist the air is, the quicker that a cloud or moisture would come out of the atmosphere. So as you know, scientifically, we look at that value. The higher that value is, it's normally, you know, out in the Midwest, they look at the dew points for, it acts as fuel for thunderstorms. And here it's the same thing, but not so much. But yeah, we use that as a way to gauge how much moisture is in the atmosphere.
I want to talk about the psychology of this a little bit, because, you know, you guys are human beings. We've talked about that before, and you're weather forecasters. You know, when we get into an extended heat wave and it's been really hot and people are starting to get cranky because it's just so hot for so long, do they start to, you know, blame you for the fact that it's not ending?
You know, we do hear jokes that, you know, we need to do something about to bring cooler weather, or during the winter bring more rain. So we joke about it, but, you know, obviously that, you know, there's nothing that we can do about it.
But I also know that when I see that forecast saying, you know, that the trough's coming in and it's going to start cooling us down, that I start to love you so much more.
Hopefully we're right.
Okay, let's explain. We've been talking about all these heat waves. Explain to us how things change and then we cool off. What generates that delta breeze?
This is Bill. It's really pretty simple, really. I mean, if you dig into the details, it'd be kind of complicated. But really, all it is getting the wind in the right direction and getting it to blow the cooler air that's sitting out in the ocean and then blowing it through where there's a gap in the terrain, which happens to be right in the delta area there, and it's able to sneak through and spill into the central part of the valley. And sometimes, kind of like the favored time of it to happen is like in the later afternoon and early evening. It's basically the kind of the momentum of it builds up with the wind blowing, and then it's able to, as the sun goes down, it's able to push across into the area. And that's usually, a lot of times we'll see that delta breeze kick up in the late afternoon and early evening hours, and that's when folks in this area, down in that area, can really take advantage of that, open up their windows, and cool off really nice.
One of the things that I do is I'm just always watching flags. And when we're in a heat wave, as soon as I start to see the flag, you know, indicating a south wind, in other words, the flag's now pointing north, I know the delta breeze is kicking in. And it takes a good day up here for it to push the hot air out. But then the cooling is coming, and, you know, psychologically, it's just really cool to see that flag start to blow from the south wind. And, you know, it's like, okay, the air conditioner is on down in the delta. Relief is in sight.
Yeah. It is kind of intriguing how you can just take little notes, observation notes, and during the summer, they can be pretty reliable predictors of, you know, the weather for the next day or so. It's kind of neat how you can do that.
This is Bill again. I mean, a lot of the folklore stuff you hear about things, I mean, not saying that that's a folklore, but, you know, there's a lot of things the farmers say or people that have lived around in an area for so long, something like that. They always have some kind of sign. A lot of the times they have some kind of scientific connection to it. So that's pretty cool.
You're listening to Blue Dot, and we are talking with Tom Dang and Bill Rash from the National Weather Service in Sacramento, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Blue Dot, and we are talking summer weather with Tom Dang and Bill Rash, National Weather Service Sacramento forecasters. How about some, let's talk some more about regional differences. You know, what are the challenges for you in the summertime where you're forecasting for like the mountain regions, Tahoe, the Sierra, up through the Cascades, Lassen Park, as compared to the valley, coastal ranges? You know, there's a lot of geographic diversity here. What are some of the major differences you see in having to put together forecasts for the area?
That's a really great question. This is Bill. That's a great question, Dave. And it kind of goes back to the way we try to concentrate on and get the word out on impactful weather. And as we all know, down here in California in the summertime, fire weather and fires is really, you know, that's our severe weather. The plains have their tornadoes. We have our fires out here. And that is the biggest challenges and the regional differences in that. I would say the biggest challenge is we'll get certain weather systems that will cause instability and showers and thunderstorms in the mountains. It's kind of where they go and where they develop is the big challenge. So the peaks of, you know, all you need to do is go drive up I-80 and you can see how the terrain changes and how you go from non-green to green. And there's definitely climatologically favored areas that get more showers or thunderstorms or more rain. So if, you know, as you move down the hill, down into the foothills, into the valley, if you can get where you typically don't get thunderstorms in the summertime, the big challenge is with these weather patterns that produce thunderstorms is to forecast, being able to forecast where there will be thunderstorms, where the fuels are really dried out, or where they don't typically happen. And you know, last couple of years that's been in the foothill areas or areas that aren't necessarily right at the peak of the Sierra, but further down, the fuels are very abundant, and it's challenging to forecast that too.
Let's briefly talk about the coast, because that's a place where people really like to go in the summertime. What is it that, why is that so cool over there in the summer?
It's kind of counterintuitive. I mean, you would think that, you know, the beach during the summer, we kind of imagine, you know, the Gulf Coast or the East Coast where it's nice and warm and balmy. It's not quite the case on the West Coast. And what that amounts to is, generally speaking, we get the north wind, I believe it's called the California Current, off of the West Coast, and that blows offshore. So what happens is when you get a wind that blows offshore, you get upwelling with the water. And so you're bringing cold water from beneath the surface up to the surface. And that's the primary reason why the water along the West Coast is so cool, is because there's just a constant upwelling occurring. And that just always is reinforcing that cool water.
Yes, because I've noticed, like, the nicest time of year on the coast, the North Coast, is really the fall rather than the summer.
And that is absolutely true. What happens is, this is Tom speaking, and oftentimes during the spring and during the fall, those are our transition seasons, we often get those weather systems kind of blowing down into the Great Basin, and those cause north winds, offshore-type winds, which, again, going back to something that Bill had mentioned earlier, offshore winds or downsloping winds, those can warm up the lower elevations. So oftentimes with those fall-type weather systems, we're getting that downsloping-type wind that helps to warm even those coastal regions.
There's a lot of people out there that really enjoy weather and, you know, really, frankly, get geeked out about it. I know I'm one of those people. How can people get involved with the National Weather Service and get, like, training to be actual weather observers?
This is Tom speaking again. And we do have a weather spotter program. We do actually have, I believe, in the neighborhood of 600 or so trained weather spotters across interior Northern California. We do hold training, spotter training seminars, both physically and online, every once in a while. But in this day and age, what we're finding more and more is that realistically everybody that's on social media is a weather spotter in their own way. I mean, they may not have that official spotter certification that we hand out, But realistically, if you have a smartphone or if you have a phone or, you know, you have access to Facebook or Twitter, you can send us reports and we can see them. What we're finding in this day and age, now that we're really kind of tied into social media, is that we get orders of magnitude more reports on Facebook and Twitter than we ever got with our official spotter program. So in a lot of ways, we kind of push people towards social media nowadays, and we do try to provide training in kind of an impromptu, unofficial way through social media so that that helps to elevate the general public and, you know, the general knowledge of you know, weather information.
Well, I enjoy following you on Twitter. Can you give a shout-out to the Twitter handle for the National Weather Service?
Absolutely. We are on Twitter. Our handle is at NWS Sacramento. We're also on Facebook. You can just look up National Weather Service Sacramento, and you can give us a like on both.
I really enjoy following you on Twitter. It's really fun, especially when there's some severe weather going on and you're hearing from people all throughout the area.
Hey, Dave, this is Bill. Thanks for saying that, and we really encourage people, and thanks for giving it a shout-out. We really encourage people to do that and follow us. We try to push out really interesting things, and when the weather is active, we really try to stay active on there and get the word out, and it's really nice to get the feedback, like Tom was saying. So thanks for that, and please follow us. We like to use that avenue to communicate and get information out.
Hey, guys, this is Matt. Are there any sort of apps or any sort of other technological tools that people out there listening right now can connect to and get information?
We do have a mobile web page. So if you're like on your phone or your mobile device and you search National Weather Service, you'll actually get a there is a mobile version of our website. Certainly, if Tom and I were king, we'd have something much nicer probably, but the government moves a little bit slower than we normally want. But you can make a shortcut to that web page and make it like an icon on your phone or your mobile device, and you click on it. You can really easily type in a location or a zip code and get the current forecast on there.
You know, we joked around a little bit earlier about summer being dull for weather forecasting. What is it about summer that you guys find interesting as forecasters?
This is Tom. This is probably a question that both of us can answer. Mm-hmm. Certainly for me, I mentioned earlier about lightning storms and thunderstorms. That's probably what gets me the most excited during the summer. But, you know, when that's not happening, there is a lot of time for us Weather Service meteorologists to do other project work. A lot of us are programmers. We spend a lot of time going out and reaching out to customers and partners. We don't give this a lot of it's not really put out there as probably as much as we should, but we actually go out and meet with, you know, FEMA, our utility customers, emergency managers, et cetera, on a pretty regular basis. And it's really important to keep those lines of communication intact because when we do run into those major weather emergencies, say your floods or fires or whatever, it's really important that those contacts are kept in place.
That's a perfect answer from Tom. Yeah, the kind of the downtime or the slower times for me as the operations officer, it's a time for me to get training together and make sure that we are ready for the weather when it turns bad. So the downtime for me, and I'm a programmer too, it's when I work on the things that we need to be better at when the weather is bad. So that's to me is the really cool part about being a meteorologist in California. You could say that it's really boring, but during the slower times, which isn't a lot because we transitioned into this fire weather season pretty quickly and we stay busy with that, but it does give us an opportunity to research and development to improve our products and services, get to know our customers better, and just generally be getting better at when the weather is bad. So it's a fun thing. It's a fun time in the summertime.
This is Blue Dot, and we are talking summer weather with forecasters Tom Dang and Bill Rash from the National Weather Service in Sacramento. Let's end by previewing fall. How do we start to see patterns change where that signals to you, no matter when, that summer is starting to transition to fall?
This is Tom speaking, and it tends to be a pretty gradual process here in California. It sure seems like summer just kind of drags on. into August and September, and sometimes even to October. I would say by late September and getting into October, you start noticing it more and more. Days are getting shorter. Your evenings are cooling off a little bit faster just because there's a lot more nighttime. And by October, usually there's like at least one weather system that we'll see in October. So that is something that, you know, we kind of keep in the back of our minds, is that weather systems start coming through in October, and then especially in November and December.
Let's talk about it. We're coming out of an El Nino year and headed into La Nina. Tell us about what we're seeing happening out in the Pacific Ocean that might indicate what next winter is going to be like for California.
Yeah, thanks. This is Bill. As we all knew, the El Nino last winter didn't pan out exactly how we thought, but we ended up, you know, we did end up with some good moisture in at least the areas that have a lot of the reservoirs in California. And that actually leads into La Nina, too, as far as Northern California being a really difficult place to have a signal from either El Nino and La Nina. It's just, even though some parts of California, like Southern California, La Nina will normally mean less moisture, it's hit or miss in Northern California. Basically, you know, there's equal chances of getting normal, above normal, or below normal with an El Nino. Even with La Nina and El Nino, basically the signals are just not too strong in Northern California. But we'll see what happens.
So on that note, we'll have to wait and see, won't we? And we'll have you guys back to talk about weather in the fall and then again in the winter.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, we'd like that, Dave. Thank you.
Bill and Tom, thank you. It's Bill Rash and Tom Dang, their National Weather Service Sacramento forecasters.
As we heard from Bill and Tom, Red Bluff is always slightly hotter than Redding, and it's basically the hottest place in the North State. And I grew up there, and I always thought that it was, but I wasn't sure if that was just my hometown pride. It's sort of one of those burdens that we all share together, and a point of pride for the North State being one of those hot places in the world.
And that's, as you know, that's where I live. I live in Red Bluff, and I enjoy living there very much. And most of the time, the weather there is delightful, but there are those couple of weeks. But, you know, really, you know, the difference between Red Bluff and Corning on one of those days is really not that much. You know, once it's 121 or it's 118, it's just miserable.
Right.
But
and we can all share that together here,
yes,
in the North State.
We certainly can. Matt, that was a lot of fun talking about summer weather. You know, we also get those beautiful 91 degree days.
Oh,
where,
yeah,
it's just delightful. And I often think to myself, like, boy, what if it was like this here all the time? And I think, you know what? If it was 85 degrees here in the summer all the time, there'd probably be millions of people here. So we kind of maybe our 110 degree days keep the population about right.
Yeah, they keep us in equilibrium.
Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio. Check out podcasts at mynspr.org. Follow us on Twitter at NSPRNews and me at Dave Shlom. And I'm reminding you that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.